Marry me, and welcome to the Witchy Spellcast. This is Kara and Saya here to add a little bit more magic into your everyday life. Remember, if you like this podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Maybe even give us a 5-star review, or drop a comment to let others know what you like about the podcast. Let's make some magic. All right, welcome back to the Witchy Spellcast. We have all three of us here today.
Welcome back, Rowan. We missed you.
Yep. It's not the same without all three of us to easily make up the manic tangents.
Yeah, that's very true. Rowan definitely keeps us grounded.
On track.
Grounded, on track, you know.
If you could see how my life has been for the past couple months, you would not think that. I have been so all over the place mentally. Just like, I cannot keep a thought in my head for more than like 5 minutes.
Same.
I mean, have you thought about the fact that it could be a neurospicy thing? Like ADHD?
Oh, it most definitely is.
Dude, life changing is whenever I got medicated for my ADHD.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just out here raw dog in this mental illness.
Yeah, but I would have to get diagnosed with ADHD though.
It's another reason I'm not medicated for it. I just, oh my goodness.
All right, so today we are going to be talking about everything home and hearth and the magic that goes into that and creating a sanctuary and working with house spirits and house deities and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it. I have, per the last several episodes, just been absolutely deep diving into whatever folklore I can find about the given topic, and it is so stinking cool. Like, I'm just excited to be here, guys.
I'm excited because for multiple reasons that we did this topic specifically. One, mm-hmm. because when this airs, it'll be the day after Lammas, which is the beginning of harvest season. And I'm sorry, I don't know about you, but harvest season is all about being inside in your home and loving all that, right? So I think that's perfect to kind of get an idea of like what you can do.
In my abode, in my den, my lair.
Cardigan, cozy. Sweater season.
Mm-hmm. Right?
For all the basic white girls out there, pumpkin spice.
Spice.
I don't like pumpkin spice, but that's me.
I like pumpkin pie and pumpkin mm-hmm. bread.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get into the pumpkin spice.
I like pumpkin cookies.
Those are good yes. too.
I like yes. a pumpkin roll.
Mm,
a pumpkin yes. roll.
I like so the cake good. Part of the pumpkin roll. I can't do the icing
part. That's because you're weird it. And you don't like icing.
It makes me sick. It's okay. Too sweet.
Well, when I come up in September, we'll have to have some sort of pumpkin thing.
Oh, I'll make you homemade pumpkin bread, girl. I got you. I got a family recipe and everything.
I'm gonna have
so
much
than what I had. I was just like, okay, let's stop at the Jiggle Eagle and get some pumpkin cookies.
Yep.
Well, that works too, but I can make.
If anybody listening knows bread. What I'm referencing when I say the Jiggle Eagle.
I think
that's probably one of the best ways to make your dwelling space feel like a home or like more you is to bake things or like cook things that make you happy or that like feel like memories yeah. or things like that. You know yeah. what I mean? So like,
it'd be nice. I bake a lot of lemon for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
My kitchen's weird. It's a weird L shape.
It is. It is a bit strange.
It is a very small kitchen.
It's small. It's shaped but, like an L. There's no counter yeah. space. It's bad.
I think what I really like to start this whole conversation off with is kind of demystifying the idea of hearthcraft and hearth and home magic. Mm-hmm. Because what do you immediately think of whenever you think of hearth magic or home magic or anything like that? What is the first thing that pops into your head?
A fire.
Wait, yes.
Fireplace with a cauldron over it.
Okay, yes.
And also a kitchen and cooking.
All right, see? Yeah. So a lot of people think kitchen witch, right? They think kitchen magic. Mm-hmm. That is not what Hearthcraft is.
Oh, no, I'm wrong.
It's a tiny little piece of it.
Okay.
A tiny little snippet. Included. But you are more correct thinking fireplace.
Okay.
But
a literal hearth.
Even that is just a tiny little piece of hearth and home magic.
Well, go on, girl. Tell us.
So hearth magic is I will. Hearth magic is all about being not just being, but creating a place that is a sanctuary for your family. Okay. And so when you think of this in this way, a house is a building, right? Mm-hmm. A house is not a home until there are people inside of it. Okay.
That's correct. Yeah.
So when we're talking about making something your home and working with the hearth, we're talking about the energy that your family puts into the building, right?
Yeah.
So you're working with all of those fun little energies and blending them together. And when we're doing that, one of the big staples of hearth magic in generations, right? And like overall is let's think about what the hearth is. The hearth is the heart and soul of the home. So yes, way back when that was an actual like hearth, like the flat stone part underneath the big dome where the chimney was, right? That was,
you built
the fire there and you kept that fire stoked or you weren't going to have fire anymore, right?
Like, and then you'd die.
Yeah. And then you'd have the cauldron there and everything happened there. You had to tend to your sick there because they needed the heat. You had to cook there because you needed the fire. You sat around it while you ate and talked. And that's where we get that huge like thing that the hearth is important is because it was the soul and the heart of the home back then. Now we have fireplaces. Not everybody has a fireplace. I have an electric one and I lucked out on because the apartment came with one.
I don't have one. It's Florida. No. Why would I need one?
Well, you don't need to actually have a physical fireplace or hearth to have a hearth. Everybody should have a place in their home that is the soul of their home, right? And for some people, that does become the kitchen, right? The kitchen can also become the heart of the home. Because we also have that, we do connect the kitchen to that because one way that you can share the energy of your home and share the abundance of your home with someone is by cooking for them.
That's fair. That's a very good point.
So when you don't have a hearth, it's all about finding that area where the energies of every person in the home merge and that you let others come into that energy. So that would be where you would create that hearth feeling too. And you don't have to have a fire there. You don't have to have a cauldron there. You don't have to have an actual like place. It would just be, that would be your central place that maybe if you're doing working with deities or working with house spirits, that's where you would make your offerings too.
Gotcha. I think that's probably my living room.
A lot of people it would be, right?
So it's where we spend the most time. It's the most intimate. It's where everybody gathers. So. And it's like the coolest looking room in my home. So. Yes.
You've put a lot. So here's the thing. And I've seen pictures of your living room, right? So you've put a lot of personal and spiritual energy into your living room.
Yes. Right? It's gothic maximalism plus witchcraft.
So that's where you've put a lot of energy into it. Yes, you entertain in that space and everything. So that would be your hearth. Maybe you have a specific spot that you are dedicating to being your hearth. Maybe you find like this nice little stand that you put and you're like, okay, this is going to be where the hearth is, like the fireplace. And you put your like symbols of the family there, right? So that could be family portraits. That could be like icons for like symbolism and things like that. You know what I'm saying?
She said gesturing to her wedding stuff.
Yeah, I said gesturing to my wedding altar.
What's so funny that you mentioned like family portraits, like I don't have any of those. My family was not one of those families that like in the 90s went to like JCPenney and
did the family portrait thing where we were all in matching outfits. We didn't do that. I don't have pictures like of my family per se.
You do though. Because the family you are now made. You have a family. You well, Adam
I was,
and
I was gonna
Okay.
I had somewhere I was going.
Sorry. With that. It didn't sound like I jumped the gun. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I was gonna say it's weird that you were mentioning family portraits because earlier today I had the idea to go to Ancestry and print out the portraits that they have in my family tree of my ancestors.
Yeah.
So, cute.
That's where I was going.
Sorry.
It's but okay.
Like, I mean, like, when I say family portraits, a lot of people, like, they... What I meant is, like, I would get a picture of me, husband, and child. Mm-hmm. That's our family, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you might have pictures with, like, your parents and your grandparents and stuff like that or whatever. But a lot of the time, the family photos are, like, who is immediately in that home.
Which is even crazier because in a sprint cleaning moment... I put up the only photo that I have of myself and husband from our wedding day. And it's now framed in my dining room. And I did that probably an hour ago.
Cute.
Yeah. It's been on my dining room table for probably a year. His mom went to like a Rite Aid and had like several of the pictures blown up and sent to us. So she had three of them sent to us. And so they were like laying on the table to flatten out because she had them like rolled in a tube. So they're laying on the table for like months. And so I just put them all in the same frame. Because it's like, it's picture one favorite. Picture. It was one picture. It's just three times. Oh,
just three copies of it.
Yeah, because I need three copies of the picture that's on my phone. Anyway.
I think I honestly think that's part of why like most people don't seem to have printed out pictures mm-hmm. as much because we all have them digitally. They're all on our phones.
Yeah. There is
something nice to have them physically.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to go like it makes and that's a whole like the whole family portrait thing, it makes it more personable. You're adding more energy into your space, right? So having mm-hmm. those pictures there gives you that energy. It's just like hanging up like a painting that someone else made, that's their energy. You're adding that to your space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a similar idea, right? See, there you go. There you go. I have like nothing hanging on my walls. There you go.
Jeez, Rowan. Yeah. Walls pecked. It's beautiful, amazing art.
I made that.
I'm big on all gallery walls.
I made that. Picture of that.
Yeah.
What fun.
And, like, little hanging shelf and
yeah. And that brings so much energy into a space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Helps you like zone that space as a specific thing, right?
Too. Absolutely.
This is and that's the all part of wall it. By my desk. I just gallery wall it. This is me redoing the gallery wall cuz it was very different for a while.
I meant to. It looks great. I love a gallery.
It's not done yet.
They never are.
I'm still adding.
Yeah, always.
The cat is walking around me.
That's okay.
I'm concerned.
What do you mean concerned? Bad concerned?
I'm just concerned whenever she's near me because I'm afraid I'm going to get bit.
Oh,
I was going to say, well, it's next
time. Like, was gonna...
You never know if she's going to bite or give you a kiss. Like, you never know. Currently, she is sniffing.
Or do both.
Or keel over.
Start with
no, she's doing
kisses.
Better. She's doing better.
Good. Okay, thank God.
I found a pill that helped. It got all of the fleas off of her. I don't see any on her, and her fur is starting to grow back, so.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Very good.
See? See, she's not as bad off now.
Yeah. She's got some fur back.
She's getting there.
Slowly looking more black and less gray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's getting there.
Less skin colored.
Yeah.
Thing.
Fleshy.
Hey.
Out of my listen. Drink.
We had to listen to how you broke your rib in half, so. saying flesh-colored cat, probably.
Oh, no, that doesn't gross me out. I just think it's funny.
Okay.
Out of my drink. I like you, cat, but not that much. I ain't sharing my cider with anybody.
So, I was going to say you could thank the Demoboy for your cat's health, because they're imps, technically, that protect your family and those who dwell within your house in Slavic and Russian mythology. And they're tiny little gray-bearded old men. And they come with your family. Like a family of them is assigned to your family. But it's only like one guy. Right? So it's like you have a butler and his children.
Like nice.
Like the butler of your parents, his son is now your butler, but it's a domovoy. That's the easiest way I can explain it.
That's very similar to a couple other what's it called? What's the word? Areas? Myths,
mm-hmm.
folklores.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy, they're called lairs. And they're called the clan's spirit. So they follow your clan.
Yeah. These are referred to as the one of the household.
Yeah.
Is just what they're called. But look at this little picture.
I think it's a
little
interesting that you referred to it as an imp, though.
So that's what one of the four articles I read. It looks like the Lorax in this picture.
That's hilarious.
For I am the Lorax, for the trees. I speak for the trees, but the trees have no tongues. I'm sorry, I got very into the Lorax.
These are speaking Vietnamese.
I speak for the trees have no tongues, and I'll speak for the trees from the top of my lungs. Again, anyway. I got very into the Lorax. I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness. So like...
Anyway.
Yeah, the lair are like just called spirits, and they only work with strega, which are Italian witches, and they preserve family bloodlines and traditions, and they follow that clan.
That's so cool. Like, so with the domovoy, every family gets one. Because it's an assigned protector. And like, hang on one sec. So they're like specifically protective towards children and animals that live in the house, because they're seen as like children and animals, and like then the super elderly. I don't want to say super elderly, but the elderly, because they're like can't help themselves. So like the domovoy are more protective towards those people and animals.
Nice.
But yeah, they like constantly look after you in the folklore, so it's pretty cool.
Nice. I think it's interesting that there's so many different, like, there's so many different house spirits for multiple different places. Like, I've got, during my research, there was three different Italian house spirits. The lair, which is your basic, like, bloodline and family. One that, and they actually make little lair houses to put on the hearth.
Oh my gosh!
To put the offerings, and you've probably seen them in pictures from like Pompeii. They look like tiny little, like they have like the four pillars, and like the little, they look like a little temple, and there's like three little bowls because you give them an offering of honey, milk, and wine.
Okay, yeah.
And you put it on your hearth. That's they're called so lair cute. Houses, right? And they have
the brownies.
I'm getting to the brownies. But the other two Italian or Roman spirits are the panes, which are pantry and kitchen deities. They make sure your food doesn't go stale.
I love that. How cute.
And then we have the Monticello, which is the one that guards the wine cellar.
I was going to say, isn't that a drink?
Monticello is the house spirit that guards the wine in the house.
In my house, that's me. I am the Monticello.
In all of the Italian folklore that I read, a lot of the spirits that they talk about are kind of described as elven. So you're thinking, kind of like they're like elves almost.
What's so strange is that, like, in Slavic, oh my goodness, Kitty's making biscuits on her leg. It's so sweet.
It hurts.
I'm sure. But pain comes with having a cat.
Yep. Rough biscuits.
So what's so funny is, like, in Slavic mythology, a lot of things are referred to as, like, what we would refer to as, like, dwarves. In mythology, right? Like, dwarven mythology. And, like, it's either, like, dwarves or, like, the worst, most horrible concoction you've ever seen. Or a really hot lady with her head and boobs on a bird. Which is a legitimate entity.
Harpy?
And
not a harpy. A harpy to me.
Kind of, but yes.
Honestly, something like that makes me think of, like, Japanese folklore, and either being, like, a kami, which is Japanese, like, god spirits, or an oni, which is Japanese devil spirits.
I have an oni tattooed on my leg. Technically, it's not an oni, because oni's horns, onis have, like, tusks. And,
yeah.
And what I have has horns. Anyway, sorry. I had to look at the difference. I got it.
There are Japanese house spirits too, but I did not go down that rabbit hole.
None of us are currently looking into Japanese folklore.
Yeah.
Can you see my husband walking
around? I have a book on Japanese folklore, but I have not
that would be fun
read much of it. It's mostly my wife's. Because she got really into Japanese folklore.
I remembered you saying that about your wife, and that's why I, like, glanced at them, but I don't remember what they were called. This was a couple days ago that I was, like, looking at them. But there are, like, two or three different Japanese house spirits. And
how cool.
Yeah.
Well, if any of our listeners know anything about Japanese folklore or want to share, please do in the comments or Q&A section, wherever you listen, etc. You can email us your Japanese folklore. I'd love to hear and learn.
Message us Japanese folklore on Instagram.
Now, your
any
first
of the Instagrams.
Your little imp dude, he was one of your good house spirits, right? So you have, was there?
So the Domovoy is, so let me preface. There is no good or bad. There just is.
Okay.
It's with all of these things.
Yes.
Let me reference my heavily cited article. let's see. They are believed to protect the well-being of a kin in any of its aspects. They're very protective towards children, animals of the house, and are constantly looking after them. They're often represented as fighting with one another to protect and make grow the welfare of their own kin. So, like, to protect our family, they have to fight off the other guys, which is adorable because they're small, tiny old men. So funny to me. Reminding me of my grandpa. The Domovoy, however, when they become angry, they reveal their demonic aspect. If the family is corrupted by bad behavior and bad language, the god may even quit and just leave the family to their own demise.
It's like
and leave them unprotected. So, like, basically, if you, like,
y'all cuss too much, I quit.
Honestly. So, like, if you're, like, a corrupt person or, like, greedy or stealing or a thief or a murderer or stuff like that, the Domovoy assigned to your home and your family can quit and would. And then you'd be left out to, like,
there you go.
I'm sorry, it says you would be left unprotected against illness and calamity.
Calamity.
Calamity. So,
I'm sorry, Calamity. I've been playing too much Legend of Zelda. So I just think of Calamity Ganon from Breath of the Wild.
See, I think of Calamity Jane, the movie. This lesbian icon.
I just like the word
love
Calamity.
That.
Anyway.
Calamity.
So let me circle all this out really quick. Domovoy are very like attached to their people, and they don't like being left alone. So it's tradition before you leave your home for, like, an extended period. Like, before I leave in September, I will have to do what's called sitting on the lane, which is basically sitting at my front door for a few minutes in silence to basically prep the Domovoy for me to leave, but also to, like, remind them that I'm coming back, that it's not, like, permanent, you know, the house is still going to be here. My pets are still going to be here. He still has a family to watch after, et cetera. Like, I'm not quitting him. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You're excused. and when, hang on. Oh my God. So we talked about them being like demonic kind of sometimes when your house is awry. To make it up to the Domovoy and to like invite them back, there are things you can do.
There you go. At least you can Which, be
please come
redeemed.
Back.
Yeah, you can be redeemed if you curse too much.
And are corrupt.
Yeah, try not to curse while doing the following.
Baby, come back.
So you can offer what's left of an evening meal. You can, in cases of extreme anger or extreme situations, like your whole family is like got the plague, you can sacrifice a rooster at midnight and sprinkle all of the nooks and corners of the common hall with said rooster's blood. You can also, okay. You can use a slice of bread strewn with salt and wrapped in white cloth, and place that in the great hall or like your hearth, because it says courtyard, great hall. I would say that's probably the main area of the home.
Yeah.
And then members of the kin would bow towards the four directions, reciting prayers to the Domovi. And one of those prayers is listed below. So.
Fun.
Let's read. It's literally one sentence.
There you go. That's the best nice. Kind. Oh, do it. Warning.
Warning. We're about to pray to the Domovi. Our supporter, come into the new house to eat bread and obey your new master. Full stop. Like, doesn't sound very nice. Doesn't sound very like
they have a kink.
It sounds
like they have a kink.
It sounds very like, get the fuck in here. What are you doing?
Yeah. Why did you leave?
You have a job.
So much like your Italian wine cellar spirits and pantry spirits, we have a few other Domovoy offshoots. Which is like the I'm gonna butcher this. Dvorvovi, there's a lot of V's and a lot of O's in there, so sorry. Which is the deity of the courtyard. We also have the Banik, which is the bath spirit. They are the deity of private or public bath houses. And the Ovinik, which is the spirit that resides in your barn.
Nice.
And protects your farm animals from sickness and disease.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, the...
Small old men.
Speaking of small old men, talk about the Scottish house spirit, the brownie, which Rowan
yes,
already met a little bit. Okay. The brownies, they're small little, like, gnomish kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
Think
yeah,
of, like,
yeah,
a
yeah.
garden gnome, almost. But they wear, like, browns and greens. And that's very important.
Okay, going on.
They come out at night and they do the chores for the women.
How lucky.
Right? So they only come out whenever the owner of the house is asleep. I don't think, from what I've read, they don't stay with specific family or anything like that. But you can invite brownies in to come and care your home, and they also do farming and other chores.
How does one obtain a brownie?
These are questions.
And I feel like I have stumbled across this in like an offshoot of society. Is this also a kink? I feel like.
Oh, sorry. Well.
Go on.
But, so brownies are always male, so that's also something. So they're little old gnomes, right?
Little old guys, little old fellas.
Now they can go bad.
Mm-hmm. Still brownie?
No, They have a new name when they go brown. When they go brown. When they get bad, they become boggarts. And I'm sure you've heard that.
I know that word. Yeah.
Yeah. Brownies become boggarts when they go bad, and they wear red.
Okay. Opposite and it's not of green.
Yes. And that's the Scots house, like the Scottish house spirit. The brownie, he can turn into a boggart if he is an asshole. Specifically, I mean, think
what
of it as Scottish.
Makes
I mean,
him turn into that. What makes the brownie turn into a boggart?
I didn't see language? A whole lot. No, it's nothing the family does. He just starts becoming an asshole.
Oh, so he's just an old crotchety man.
Yeah, if he starts becoming an asshole, he becomes a boggart. There's probably more to it, but I didn't find anything about that. It's something that I definitely would look more into to see why they turn into boggarts. But I did think it was interesting that they turned into boggarts.
That is fun.
My knowledge relating to brownies, which other people in the comments or whatever could correct me, because I don't know where I got this knowledge. So I don't know if my knowledge is actual facts or if this is just shit that I've
from
made
a
up.
Book? Or from a book that we've read that might not be fact.
Like... Maybe. I don't know. But brownies are, they're not latched to a family. They are specifically latched to the house. So locational. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And much like Kara's Italian ones, you would give milk and honey.
Yeah.
Which then, if you allow the house to fall into disrepair, and if you don't give them proper offering, that can help speed along them becoming an asshole.
Yeah, that's true.
So
if you want to summon
don't
anything,
repair your house.
Milk and honey.
Yeah, so if you let your house fall into disrepair and you don't try to like help with the upkeep of the house, they're probably just gonna get real pissed at
get,
you and just
yeah.
be like, you know what's
you,
great,
I'm
you
gonna,
guys?
I'm gonna fuck some shit up. They become mischievous.
I found it.
Ah.
So I just typed into Google, why do brownies turn into boggarts? And the first little blip I see says, in extreme cases, brownies are even sometimes said to turn into malicious boggarts if angered or treated improperly. A brownie is said to take offense if a human observes him working, if a human criticizes him, or if a human laughs at him. So, I mean, I'd get angry too. Respect my authority.
Yeah. But also, they only like to work when people are asleep. They don't want to be seen. So if you try to catch a brownie, you're kind
of
getting what you came for, right? The Irish
play dumb
actually
games,
have...
get dumb prizes.
Yeah, the Irish actually have a female version of a brownie. So in Scottish, brownies are always male, and it's Scottish. And then you have the banty, which is basically a female brownie, does all the same stuff, but it's like a little old grandma. And so it might sound very familiar. I think I read this, that they're very... closely related to banshees, so
I was gonna ask.
Wait, let me just take a moment to plug my favorite anime again. In Ancient Magus Bride, one of the characters in it, which Saya, I know you had watched some of it. I don't know if you had seen. There was a blonde that was in Lolita wear in Elias's house.
Yeah.
So her name is Selkie. She is the keeper of the house.
Is she a Selkie?
No, so her name is just Selkie. Or it's written out as Selkie, but everybody they always pronounce it Selkie, but it's written Selkie.
Okay. Okay, I got that.
But she is... One of the episodes actually goes into like her backstory. And she used to be a banshee, which I know a decent bit about banshees. They are specifically female spirits, which are latched to a particular family, and they are a crying spirit, screaming / crying spirit. They kind of wail. Seeing them, yes, thank you. Seeing them
That's what I'm here for.
Is indicative of knowing that death is coming. So her whole thing was she was the banshee of this family, and the entire family had died out. So, like, other fae kept seeing her and being like, oh, it's so sad, this banshee, she lost her family, her family is gone. And one of the other fae ends up finding her the house, which Elias ends up living in, and she transforms into, they call her a brownie, but we know that that is not entirely accurate.
That's so cute.
She transforms into a banty.
That's adorable.
So that sort of worked the other way around, I guess.
There you go. Yeah.
Because she did not start as a banty and become a banshee. She was a banshee, but the family that she would cry for completely died out. She didn't have anybody to inform that they were going to die.
Well, maybe. And I mean, like, I'm going to be going into Irish folklore and everything like that after I do my Italian folklore, because I am both heavily Italian and heavily Irish, so I'm going to be doing that, both of those ancestry-wise. But I'm sure that it would work both ways. So I'm sure, like, a boggart could turn back into a brownie, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like, if a brownie can turn into a boggart, you could probably get him to turn back into a brownie. And same thing with the banty and banshee.
It's magic. Like, I'm sure it works both ways.
That's fair.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to appease, you want to appease a fairy or a fae of any type, you give them milk and honey and something shiny, they're happy for life.
Don't mess with the fae, first of all. First and foremost.
Always. Don't mess with the fae.
Oh, yeah. I remember her. Okay. Aww. She's so sweet looking.
Aww. So she was the banty. I want to find her in her banshee form.
So, speaking of crazy, quote-unquote, bad female spirits, I have here the Kekemora. Oh, cool. Nice. She's fucking cool. Hang on. Let me make sure.
Which, from me Googling that, I also realized that she's not only called Silky, she's also called Silver or Silver Lady.
There you go.
Oh, I like Silver Lady. That's cute. So I have here the Kekemora, which is the Russian Slavic version of what I'm going to say is a banshee, because what I'm about to explain to you can only be referenced as objectively bad.
I have heard of the Kekemora.
Fantastic. Let me refresh everybody.
So, it sounds familiar, but I know nothing about them.
I've seen a documentary on them.
Wrap in and wrap up, because you're about to go on a flipping ride. First and foremost, they are the opposite of the Domovoi. Their behavior depends entirely on the people in the house. And when a Kekemora lives in the house, This is actually really cute, in my opinion. She lives behind the stove and makes noises that... Yes! Behind the stove. And she makes noises that are similar to those made by mice in order to obtain food.
I just sacrifice some food behind there just in case.
Just chuck it in there. Honestly, same. So...
That right there reminds me of, like, anytime me or my wife drops food in the kitchen, we just go, to the floor gods!
Exactly.
I mean,
to the Mora. So, in specifically Polish folklore, Mora are the souls of living people that leave their body during the night and are seen as wisps or straw or hair or moths, which, if you remember a couple episodes ago, I said that I am one of the people who believe that you leave your body during your sleep. And I didn't know that this was a Polish belief. Surprise.
There you go.
I am also petrified of moths. So maybe that ties in
moth
somewhere.
Moth friend.
Unlikely.
I also have a massive moth tattoo.
Yeah, I do. That's neither here nor there. Anyway.
Moth friend.
They can look pretty and still be scary.
Moth love lamp.
Moth do love lamp.
It's funny. Moth tulip lamp. It's funny. My husband also hates moths.
I love moths. Moths are better than butterflies. That's my opinion. Fight me.
I like them equally. They're both
so
pretty.
So in Slovenia, Croatia, and Serbia, they're called Mara, and they are a dark spirit that take the form of a beautiful woman and then visit men in their dreams, torturing said men with, quote, desire, and then, quote, dragging life out of them. And in fact, the Mara were the first explanation for sleep paralysis.
Oh, I was about to say, it sounds like succubi.
Yeah, hum. So you didn't do the names.
Or there's also another similar thing, but I can't. My brain's not
braining.
My brain not braining.
So you know how earlier I said they could look like a wisp or hair or moth? Girl, you wish. You wish. So that's when they're, like, traveling, right? So if a Kikimora just exists, they might have the nose of a dog, or a chicken beak, or chicken legs. They might look like a goat. They might have glowing eyes or horns or anything, really, because they can take any part of any animal and apply it to what they look like.
I think it's great that the Kikimora can look like a goat or a thing with chicken legs.
So the funny thing is like no matter what animal part it has or parts, it says it's always feminine. It can also look like a deceased family member. So if you see your dead grandma in your sleep choking you, it's probably a Kikimora. So
a dead
luck.
Family member or a furry question mark?
Dead family member, furry,
a very feminine furry.
Hyper feminine.
Where
furry.
It's almost less furry, more in the realm of like cat girl, but not cats.
Demonic cat girl energy, really.
Demonic animal girl energy, question mark.
Demonic
because
animal
chicken girl.
Chicken girl?
Demonic goat. Chicken leg girl.
Goat girl.
Demonic goat girl.
Got it. That's already. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's a movie called The
Witch.
Like
a satyr?
Yeah. Demonic satyr girl. So.
She was a good news and there's bad news. She's a see you later girl.
Oh my god.
That's the name of our new band.
Yeah.
Demonic satyr girl.
Somebody get Loki on the phone.
This is kind of wasteland my mind is, because Seder Girl just immediately puts Skater Girl into mine.
Yeah.
I would listen to that.
moving so far forward.
I'm sorry, I've had hot apple cider. You know how that makes me.
It makes you very giggly. And
I have
very
no
giggly.
Excuse. I have literally no excuse.
That's fine.
No, the squirrels in your brains aren't going in the same direction, nor is mine. It's okay. That's an excuse.
I haven't been going the same direction in a while.
Exactly.
I think they're just sitting off to the side throwing their nuts at the wheel instead of actually
and each
like running it.
Oh my god.
Oh, shoot.
Are we ready? Everybody maybe. On board? Get it out. Get the giggles out.
Sai is sitting there like the only one that's fully functioning brain-wise.
Rare, honestly. Quite the rare.
I feel like in our defense, she is in a different time zone, so she is an hour behind the two of us.
Yeah, it's only 7:30 here.
So. It's 8:30 here, but you know, it's all good.
This is a late night episode for us.
I actually don't mind recording this late.
That's nice. I don't mind.
It's cozy.
So, I'm sure my dog is not as happy because she wants to go for a walk. I'm sorry.
I'm sure. Yeah,
I've got meds.
Poor thingy.
Anyway.
Yes, sorry. Yes. I'm just hoping that my kid falls asleep while I'm in here.
So the fun parts about the Kikimora are. She enters your room through your keyhole or under your door. So if you don't have a keyhole, you're still fucked. She then sits on your chest and strangles you, right? Sleep paralysis, Steven. Check mark.
I'm into that.
Hot. So to repel them, children are advised to, this is a little hodgepodge because of Christianity influence, but children are advised to look to like the North Star out their window in their bedroom and make the sign of the cross on their pillow before putting their head on it. So like blessing your sleeping items, which I'm sure used to be making the sign of like a star or the sign of Harun or whomever, or like the sigil for your family. It could literally be anything now. Anyway. They're also supposed to then turn the pillow over and redo it so it's both sides, in case you're like me and you get hot-headed while you sleep and you flip your pillow, you're already covered. So. You can also repel them by leaving... Mm-hmm, so do I. This is actually something I do. You can repel them by leaving a broom upside down behind your door. So, I don't know if you know that, but upside down broom, it protects from evil spirits. So I have one.
What do you constitute as an upside down broom, though? So, which way would be upside down?
Upside down for me is bristles up.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Because you use a broom bristles down.
Yeah. I'm just going to go wild and just put it on a spinning wheel and just go, all right, I'm going to bed.
Oh my God.
So,
broom roulette.
That makes me think of. I'm sure it probably started out as a witchy thing, but it's an old wives' tale where if you have guests over that you want them to just leave already, like they've overstayed their welcome, if you would go and turn your broom upside down, they end up leaving really quick.
Yep.
Because they're really uncomfortable because it's upside down.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's weird. I'm going to leave now. It's just but I've heard that too. In. I was just like, oh no. No, I've heard that one too.
So there's one type of Kikimora that comes from the forest, and they're married to the Domofi. I can't imagine a more irritating marriage than this. Like, okay, also look at this picture and tell me it's not the creepiest effing thing you've ever seen. That black blob in the corner. Can you see it?
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a Kikimora. And that's a child standing beside it. So they're not very tall. As opposed to this picture, which one would think is very tall. So they're probably only like 3 feet tall. It makes them less scary, but still. Tiny 3 foot lady creeping up on your chest, choking you out. It's still scary. Still equally scary.
Still a creepy little feathered, furry.
Right? I feel like a lot of the house spirits, though, are that small because I also
very
came across.
Small.
I didn't look into it, but I was like, I saw like a list of house spirits with where they originate from and like their names. Did you know a German house spirit is a kobold? You didn't.
Yes.
You just thought that was a little creature that you fought in D&D. Did not know that one. That was a little shocking for me.
That is a German fae.
Kobold.
Like the color? Cobalt?
No, kobold with a D.
Ah, got it. Okay.
K-O-L-B-O-D or something like that, kobolds.
Got it.
The last, like one of our very first campaigns with our D&D crew, I made them fight like 30 of them in a cave.
This is like, well, that was like at freaking Rowan's bachelorette party. I wasn't expecting the DM to throw like 30 trolls at us. And then we all almost died.
Listen, that thing was a vampire, and nobody's going to tell me differently. I know they said it was something else, but that was a vampire. You cannot persuade me in any other way.
I don't remember what they called it.
I can't remember. What was it?
It was a vampire.
An Oni?
I can't remember.
Was it an Oni?
Was it Japanese? I can't remember.
Tony the Oni or something like that. That's there was a rhyme to it.
Oh yeah, that's I think you're right. I think
that
was.
Sounds right.
I think it was Tony.
Yeah, but no, that was a vampire. And you
yeah,
can
find absolutely.
Him in this.
Yeah,
I would have thrown down with that DM.
How many mythical creatures can there be that live off of blood? I mean, DM us,
and
tell us.
Debonair. I mean, come on.
What? Debonair. All I heard was habanero.
Debonair.
Debonair.
Yeah, you were talking about yeah. peppers. It's really confused.
He dressed so nicely.
He did. So what's fun is there's also a swamp Kikimora who brews beer in the swamp.
Brews beer?
Name is, yeah, she makes beer. and her name was Baba Bolotnitsa. 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 Bolotnitsa.
Beer witch.
Beer witch. And it's actually said that the reason swamps are foggy is because the fog rises from when she's brewing her beer. So Kikimora also, if you like appease them, they watch after your flock and whatever like chickens and sheep that you have. And they also do your housework.
These house spirits are so nice doing your housework for you.
Mm-hmm. And
but only if you don't watch
ever
them.
Exactly. You can't do not look just upon the bay.
Don't watch them.
Yeah.
Ask them to come. Be like, hey, cool. Help me out. I appreciate it. Don't look at
leave
them.
Out milk and honey.
So like if you upset your Kikimora, she will whistle in your house, which is super bad luck if you're Slavic. You're not supposed to whistle inside. And you're not supposed to whistle at night. Everybody knows that. But she'll start whistling in your house. So if you are like home alone and start hearing whistling, it's a Kikimora. Sorry if that upsets you guys.
I like whistling.
She'll also, she'll also break your dishes and like is... She like becomes the noise in the night. She becomes the bump in the night. Oh. She becomes the noises.
I like that.
She just starts kind of causing like irritants. I wouldn't say like mischief because that's just more frustrating. But
general chaos.
Exactly. General chaos. Small dwarf sized chaos.
Little pixie it's chaos.
Little guys.
Little gnome chaos.
Little Slavic gnome chaos.
Little gnome chaos.
That looks kind of like a chicken with a lady's head. Lives behind the stove.
Oh my god. I just remembered with the Banty in Irish folklore. Mm-hmm. It was said that the woman of the house wasn't allowed to like fully clean the home. It had to like leave it slightly a mess, or she would be tried for being a witch.
Because I've got that on lock.
Yeah, like but if like if you have a Banty and you're doing extra work for her, mm-hmm. and your house is like immaculate,
too clean,
you're a witch.
Oh, I knew there was a reason I didn't like my grandma. Besides the cult stuff. I mean, that's the given, right? How fun,
right? I like the idea of like. Using house spirits or thinking about house spirits and like all that, but some people don't do house spirits. They do deities, and there's like an F ton depending on which pantheon you're looking at.
Correct.
So I've got like a quick little list here.
Ooh, please go on. I love to learn.
So, who do you what pantheon do you want first?
Let's
there's
go
a couple
the widely.
In each of them.
Let's go the widely known Greek.
Hestia, the hearth goddess.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Italian.
Which would also be Roman because I haven't gone fully into the Italian, like the
Nordic.
Well, it would be Etruscan. So, depending on what area of Italy you are witchcrafting in, you're being a strega in Tuscan, it's all Etruscan stuff. They fucking hate Romans. Like, they don't follow the Roman stuff. So you have the Roman stuff.
It's just Greek with extra words. It's just Greek with extra steps.
Basically. It really is. But if we are looking at the Romans, because I don't have the Etruscan gods on here, we have Vesta and Juno. Vesta is another hearth goddess. So she is Hestia's, or Hestia's, however you pronounce it. But Vesta is Hestia. Same person.
Same person, yeah.
Juno is the guardian of the hearth and home, though. So she's a goddess, but she is the guardian of the hearth and home. And if you remember from reading your astrology charts, they are two of the goddess asteroids that hit big in your charts. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. What about Rowan?
Hmm?
Do you have a pantheon? Pick a pantheon. Nordic.
Frigg. Goddess of the hearth and home. And then Loki.
I give up. He's
a fire god, meaning he can be honored in the hearth. So you can pray to Loki as your house god.
He's like Beetlejuice. We can't say his name more than three times an episode.
I'm waiting for a text.
Yeah, we got to say it one more time then.
I'm just waiting for the group message to be like, guys, listen!
Oh my gosh.
So we got Greek, Roman, we got Norse. I've got three other ones.
Celtic,
we got, I always butcher her name, but I'm going to say it, Brigid? I can never remember.
I believe
remember
it's Brigid.
Okay. Those Celtic words, man.
Mm.
She is the goddess of the sacred flame. She's also the one that people most likely use at Imbolc. So that goes hand in hand with Candlemas, you know, sacred flame.
Candlemas.
And then we have Ceridwen, which is the goddess of the cauldron and hearth.
How cool of a name is that?
Yes.
Do you have, I know it's unlikely, do you have like Native American?
I don't, but I'm sure that there are. Nah, I didn't. I went with the bigger ones that people would probably like work with. I only have two more, and you'll probably not guess them.
Something Spanish.
No.
German?
I have a German.
Yes.
Germanic. That's cool. I'm gonna say this word wrong. Bechta or Bechka? Bechta? I don't know. It's Bechta. Rowan, help me. I know you're.
I can't without seeing things. I need paper.
I'd pull it up to the camera, but I don't think you'd read my writing.
And it would be backwards.
Yeah, it probably would be.
Spell it for me again.
Bechta. Bechta, maybe? Bechta. There you go.
She's your German is so pretty.
There you go. She's the spinning goddess.
Spinning? Oh, like yarns and threads.
Yeah, spinning yarns and threads. And I mean, you go, when you're thinking of the hearth and the home, you're sewing. So, and this is, I thought Rowan would love this, but sewing is such a huge staple in hearth magic.
Oh my gosh.
Love that.
So I also thought you'd really enjoy the spinning goddess.
You're learning German. You enjoy spinning in the modern tradition. Are these signs? Do we need to look into German folklore for you?
Mayhaps. Maybe I need to start looking into German folklore.
When I was doing a lot of this research, and German stuff popped up so much, and I was like, none of us are looking at German. I know that Rowan's learning German and everything, but I was like, none of us actively look at German. But I had to put this goddess on here. I just had to. Like, my brain's like, no, you have to put it on here. Like, yeah, okay, mention the kobold, whatever. But no, put that on here. The last one I have is Scottish. I'm going to butcher this again. That. Okay.
Just say it with a Scottish accent.
Kaliak. Kaliak. Or Kaliak or something like that. It's C-A-I-L-L-E-A-C-H. Kaliak. She is the kitchen goddess. She's the goddess of the kitchen.
Are you putting into Google Translate, Saya?
I am.
Smart.
I should do that. I really should do that. But I want to try to butcher these words as much as I can. How is he supposed to learn?
How to say more interesting names from Ireland. Whose spelling has anything or hardly anything to do with how to pronounce it. So how do you go about that saying this one? Talia. Talia. It's pretty straightforward.
Talia. Isn't that far off?
No,
I just made the CH sound.
Yeah. It's Kalia. Yeah.
But that's Kalia. What that video pretty. Said is pretty true. If you look at either Scottish or Celtic names, spelling means nothing.
Yeah.
Like, literal nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see like TikTok videos and stuff of people being like having their friends and being like showing them a name and being like, how do you pronounce this? And it's nowhere near
literally every single character in the books we read.
Like, at least your the list ones the characters in the books we read, once somebody says it, you can look at it and go, okay, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
But with Irish Scottish names, that's not the case.
Yeah,
so Scottish people, can you please explain?
Any Irish or Scottish listeners, please give us your input on why you spell these things. Oh, I forgot to mention, I forgot to mention that the word Kikimora means bag made person,
bag lady.
So she's a bag lady
that lives under your behind your stove.
So, Rowan, we've talked about how spirits and goddesses and the basis of hearth and home. What do you have to bring to the table today?
I have some information on how to set up your altar.
Yay!
Ooh,
so making a sanctuary.
For altars.
There you go. So that's sacred space making.
So, definitely sacred space, depending on different... What's the word I'm looking for? Not lore, that's not right. Whichever religion you're a part of, or what practice you follow, the location for where you would want to put your altar would be different. Because some practices, you would need to be facing a certain direction for your altar, much like how, if you think of... how Muslims have to face east to face Mecca. Some practices say like the altar has to be facing north. Some say that it should be in the front room of your home, facing your door. So like when you would walk into your home, it would be the first thing you see. I've also seen where based off, I can't remember where that was. Where was that? Ah, here it is. I was like, where in this book is it? Positioning your altar. For instance, according to feng shui, if you look at eastern, it should be in an area, not the area that has the most energy of your home. It should be just off to the side so that its energy remains pure.
Nice. I knew that feng shui had specifics when it came to altar placement and literally everything else placement.
Oh, yeah. And, like, the different, like, points for, like, north, south have different meanings and location in relation to doors and windows because of energy flow and all of that. Feng shui is a big can of worms. We're not getting into all of that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has time for that.
At the same time, the most standard sort of setup for an altar tends to be having four main associations for the four main elements. So earth, air, water, and fire. You could also include spirit, but at the same time, this is an altar, so isn't everything on the altar kind of spirit in a way?
Yeah.
And then often god and goddess. Of course, yep, this is looking more at a pagan altar. If it's specifically for a singular deity, you can do that as well. If there's only one deity or one spirit you tend to practice with, you can make it more geared toward them. Typically, you'd have goddess on one side, god on the other. I feel like most of the time, Kara, you can correct me on this, goddess would be on the left and god on the right.
Like if you're, so I'm trying to think, I always do, like, if I'm facing it, the goddess is on my left side and the god is on my right side, me facing it. So like if you're looking at it in the opposite direction, but if, when I'm looking
at
it.
No, I'm saying like, if you put this up against a wall and you walk up to it.
Your left side is on your left. Your right.
Yes.
God is on your right. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I was always told.
Train of thought. And then you can use, for the different elements, you can use either different candles to represent those, or being more literally, a stone for earth, a chalice for water, a wand would represent air, an athame or knife for fire. And for those items, you can either face them to actual north, south, east, west, wherein north is earth, east is air, south is fire, west is water.
Yeah. I was trying to remember off the top of my head.
Most of the time, honestly, the way that I tend to remember it is because of the House of Night novels.
It's been so long since I read those. I always remember west, water, and then earth, and fire.
They always started in the east with calling air and would work around to north. So starting with air, going south to fire. And if you think about it, the more south to the equator you get, the hotter it gets, thus fire.
Yeah. West, water. Easy to.
You could literally pull out your like thing to be able to find true north, like real north to set those up, or if it feels more comfortable to you, just whatever the top part of your altar is could be earth.
Yeah.
At the same time with this, this is more of a, I guess you could say, traditional formal altar setting. This doesn't have to be what you end up doing for your altar. Your altar could be just a shadow box of things that you collected around your home and in your neighborhood. It could be just a grid worth of crystals or just a handful of pictures that you arranged in a pretty format. It is to you whatever it needs to be. But the main point is that it is a center point for your power. It is a place that you come to, I guess you could say, like, revitalize your spiritual energy. To feel yourself spiritually.
I love that.
That's a sacred
excellent
space,
way of saying that. Yeah.
It's sacred space. It doesn't have to be a formal table with all these fancy candles and your chalice and cauldron and
they're pretty
whatnot.
To look at.
What's it? It's pretty to look at.
It's
but
so
that
pretty
doesn't
to
necessarily
look at.
Be, it's not necessarily what you need.
Yeah. It's not always functional too.
Yeah. For our listeners, if people want to check out my Instagram, which is rowan.mistrite, I have it, I believe, like, tagged at the top of my page. There is a reel. I think that's what they called it on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I have a reel showing my previous altar setup, which was a formal altar. I currently don't have my altar set up because that doesn't feel right anymore, and I don't know what I need it to be yet. I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah. I'm actually in that same boat. I have all of the like ingredients for a fantastic altar, but like none of them feel like me anymore because my spiritual journey has changed so much.
And so this was something that kind of ties in with the whole hearth and homecraft and like being, because everybody, in my opinion, everybody should work with this because everybody has a home. Like even if you don't have a physical like building on you, you still have a place that you live and put your energy in. So I feel like everybody should be working in some way, shape, or form with hearthcraft or homecraft or whatever in that kind of a magical sense. And the key player with this is functionality. What works for you on a daily basis. So maybe you can work on a functionality with a full like traditional altar setup, and that's awesome. But for a lot of us, me included, you guys might be the same way. Your altars, your functionality of an altar might be a small little area in multiple places of your home. Yes, right?
That's mm-hmm. exactly right. Mine are normally so, like, up high because of I have cats.
Yeah, I have a toddler and
exactly.
puppy. So, and
safe.
I have a doge. A literal doge.
She's adorable.
Yeah. So the like those formal altars are so pretty. I love seeing pictures of them. But it's mm-hmm. just personally, it's not functional for me to have something like that out.
Correct. Correct.
But like
even then, I had noticed that half the time having it set up, I didn't tend to practice at it.
Yeah. And that could mean, like, a couple different things. Maybe a formal altar wasn't your setup. Like, that's not what you needed. But also, maybe you have it in the wrong spot.
I could almost guarantee it's in the wrong spot. But I live in a tiny apartment. And I don't have room.
Yeah. So it's like
so
finding
it
that
went
spot.
Where it went.
Yeah, and having a ton of like little tiny altars everywhere has seemed to work out best for me. Like I have my whole cabinet full of all of my supplies, and we'll call mm-hmm. it an altar, but it's just filled with like my supplies. Like it's just crystals and herbs and books and stuff like that. And making my little wedding altar in the bedroom was like that felt right, like especially because
spice
we were talking. That, and plus, because we were talking about, like, hearthcraft, and we were, like, really going into it, and right now is perfect for me personally when it comes to hearthcraft, because Leo is actually in my house of home and family, so that's really highlighted for me right now. And then on top of that, with Venus being retrograde in Leo, that's even more because Venus is all about, like, your, like, relationships with your family and your loved ones, personally, because it's in my fourth house. So this is really, like, hitting home for me currently, and I am focusing on my home right now because of the energy happening right now. So that needed to happen because Venus said so.
Well, I'm sure the goddess Venus also said so. Because
probably.
Nothing says Aphrodite / Venus worship like a literal altar to your spouse in your bedchamber.
Yep,
this is true. These are facts.
I think it came out cute.
Just as somebody who's worked with Aphrodite, please just be very careful. She comes all quick. Go ahead.
I don't really work like I will like I acknowledge the different gods and everything, but I don't work with them.
Okay, fair enough.
I haven't since college. Like, I haven't worked with gods since college. Fun fact.
I'm kind of one of those people that's like, if I need help in this area, I'll ask this particular person, but it's not necessarily like I'm devoted to these particular ones.
Yeah.
So, we're just kind of loosey-goosey over here.
Wiggling around.
More of a, if something's I'm about to happen, I'll just be like, gods help me.
Yeah, exactly. I just kind of like
or a, goddess a give me strength.
Pagan blob.
Pagan blob.
I look towards the celestial bodies. So like if I'm talking about like maybe I'm like working with Vesta, people will probably think I'm working with the goddess Vesta, but I'm like working with the asteroid either in my chart or in like transit. they're all named after like all the gods and goddesses, that's what they're named after. So like the bodies being named after the goddesses and gods.
So
it makes sense that people would be like, but they do coincide, right? So like Vesta is a hearth goddess and Vesta the asteroid is all about the sacred home and the sacred union and stuff like that. So like,
well, that worked out well then.
Yeah, that's purposefully done too, though. Like you think about Venus, she's all about relationship and beauty and values and everything like that. That's what the planet's about. That's what the goddess is of. So there's a specific correlation. So if you know your gods, you know your planets.
That's cool. Well, then I guess I know more astrology than I give myself credit for.
They do. Like, I mean, Pluto's all about transformation. He's that transformation daddy there.
I have a tattoo of the symbol.
Pluto. Yeah.
It's like one of my various god resembling tattoos.
Yeah. And then there is an asteroid Persephone too.
Oh, other shoulder. I have the pomegranate for her.
Which is fun. In my personal chart, Pluto and Persephone are actually like conjunct. So they're like right beside each other in my personal chart.
Love that.
Yeah, which is in my seventh house of relationships. So that's fun.
That's the cutest thing I ever heard.
I have a huge stellium in my seventh house. Like I have like all of the planets in Scorpio. It's fun.
Aren't mine in... I think all of mine are in Leo.
You have a huge stellium in Leo.
That's what she said.
I think Rowan, you have a stellium
like 8
too.
Out of 12.
You have like your chart is like a bucket in this aspect where like handle here, there's like your moon and then all of your stuff's here. Mine's the opposite direction, so mine's a bucket where all of my stuff's here and then my moon's here, which is fun. Rowan's, yours is a completely different shape.
Show me the shape of your chart.
If you want to give me a second, I can run and grab my book that I had printed.
Well, I mean, I can pull it up right here.
Okay.
unless you want to go get it. But I have my phone right here, and I did send it to you through
That's true.
So. Oh, yeah, your chart, like, I don't know if this is going to show up very well.
It looks pretty balanced.
Yeah. It's a pretty, like, oh, yeah. The three houses that you have, like, that are empty are evenly spaced. So, like, and actually, 10th house isn't even empty because you have your sun in it, but it's anaretic, so it doesn't look like it's actually in the house, but it is.
It's barely in it.
Yeah.
A lot of empty,
but it's enough to be considered it's in it. Because you've got...
Barely there, but there.
Yeah, your second and your sixth house are empty, which are two career houses. And then your other career house, your 10th house, only has your son in it. That's not a bad thing. Empty houses are just... So there's two different ways to think about this empty house-wise. And I didn't go into this in your chart workups. Because it's for understanding, like... what the meaning behind it is, it's not really necessary, but an empty house just means karmically your soul has already learned those lessons.
Oh, cool. So like more empty houses, the better.
Not necessarily. You want to kind of balance things out, but when you have a stellium, that's an area of your life that your soul karmically needs a fuck ton of help with.
Shit. And we've got two huge stelliums.
I have two stelliums.
Ooh, girl, you better start learning.
I got one in Scorpio, which is my seventh house of relationship. And then I have another one in Capricorn in my ninth house of like learning and spirituality. So those are like heavy hitter focus points for me.
So relationship and spirituality, and it seems like you're doing pretty good there.
Yeah, it seems like you're focus. On your mark.
Especially because Capricorn also holds my North Node, my Midheaven, and my Lilith. Like, Capricorn is a heavy hitter for me because it has a lot of life path or life purpose, like, huge points. So Capricorn is my big hitter, basically, because he's got my life purpose going on in there.
Nice.
So we talked about house spirits. We talked about deities to work with the house. We talked about setting up sacred spaces. We talked about hearthcraft in general. Perfect for this time of the year. We're going into that harvest season. We just celebrated, when this episode goes up, we just celebrated Lammas.
That's
cute. So we're getting into that season where I think this is the perfect time of the year personally, because, you know, it hits astrologically for me that this is the time I should be focusing on my house, but, and my family and my home. But overall, like, when you start going into that fall harvest season, you're going to be starting to think family, right? Gratitude and things like that.
Yeah.
So this is perfect time to start really thinking about how do you personally focus on creating magic in your everyday life, in your home? How do you blend the energies of the people in your home? And how can you think about what's going on? Where's your hearth? What are you going to be working with? And I think the best way to start that, if you haven't, is to think about what your values are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
I had something and now it just fluttered away. Look, there it goes.
See, you're talking about that in, like, personal seasons. I'm just like, man, this makes a lot of sense why I start thinking about, like, doing those things more in the spring, because my personal seasons are, like, flip-flop.
Yeah, right.
My personal seasons fit the southern hemisphere.
So we're going into like your winter, right?
I'm going to be going into spring.
Yeah. And so Saya, that's like not far off though. Your personal seasons are one sign off from Rowan's.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like,
because my spring starts with Scorpio,
which is middle of October,
which tells me that this new movement spiritually for you matches spring for quote unquote typical people, because it's new and springy and
you're coming into this you're coming into
transitional phase
beginning, you're getting into that new spiritual cycle going on there,
which also finding out that makes a lot of sense why I just kind of just want to chill and get sleepy and vibe throughout the actual summer.
Yeah.
Because that is my personal winter.
Yeah.
It makes so personal much help.
And like, what I love about the whole astrology thing too is moon phases too. Like, you start checking those moon phases out and seeing like where your energy levels are on a day-to-day in a month base. It helps so much for you to plan out your months.
That makes a lot of sense. That just makes so much effing sense. Excuse me. Oof. On that note, check us out on Instagram at The Witchy Spellcast. You can follow myself, The Witchy Saya. You could follow Kara at Kara Darkthorn. You could follow Rowan at Rowan.Mistrite. Subscribe, I guess, would be the word to the podcast. If you're on Spotify, I believe you subscribe.
I think that, or there's like a little notification button that they put. I haven't looked.
Whatever it is, do the thing.
Subscribe, drop a like, leave comments.
Like, comment, subscribe. I don't know.
One of the things, something has a follow or subscription. Just do it so we know that you're there.
we're just going to do like a real quick roll call. So all you have to do is interact somehow if you're listening.
Somehow, so we know that you're there. And that we're not just talking into space.
Which, I mean, is fine. This is manifesting. if you're listening on Spotify, there's a cool Q&A section at the bottom of our episode. Leave your Qs and we'll leave our A's.
That is how that works.
There's okay, usually cool. A different question for each episode I try. So it goes with the you know, episode. But oh, if you have questions,
you leave a Q.
You leave the Q.
And they leave their A's?
They leave A's.
Yes. I leave the question. They leave their answers. But if they have questions, they can always comment
on our Instagram.
Exactly.
We're still
DM
we're still
us,
getting...
whatever.
Yeah,
we'll get
just
there,
talk
guys.
To us so we know that you're there.
Honestly.
You're our imaginary friends. Nobody believes us.
Honestly. We're real people. Just hanging out, talking about stuff on the internet. If you enjoy us talking about stuff, let us know.
Yes, please.
Stuff and things and more. All right.
Okay. You're right, bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Witchy Spellcast. Join us next week for some more magical goodness.